The pregame show for your day. Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder on News Radio WTAM 1100.
But the most exciting thing might be a light on a toilet seat. It's Will's Ways to Save. Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News, out in Las Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Association show. You can see this at WTAM.com. Keyword save. Granite is excited.
It's about to get really strange. Alongside some savings, great to be with you. I was the first reporter in the world on the floor of the Consumer Electronics Show and setting up behind me for another exciting day of tech. There is one piece of tech which is huge overseas, Asia, Europe, that is now being profiled here, and I want to share, I can't keep a straight face, it's amazing. I want to share this price drop with you. Yep, it's a real thing, complete with human body induction clamps. But if you look at it, just in terms of the savings and the practicality, this is a way to end blinding visits to the bathroom at night, stumbling in the dark, misses and messes, great for seniors and kids and toilet training or just people looking to get a new level of accessibility in their home. It's here. It's flying off the shelves, and there is some frugality tied to this item, which is not a paid product. On our website, is it something I'm buying? Well, I'm constantly traveling, always in different cities, and often disoriented, not just at night, but in life. So, yeah, I am. It's going to light the way. And if you want to light the way, you know where to go. Happy savings. Back to you.
Matt Granite, watching him on 3 this morning. You got to see the video. It's at WTAM.com. Keyword save. He is excited. Coming up in 5, our Bill Zimper will join us. The popularity of the National Football League. Big weekend, of course, with the playoff games and concern about concussions still. Bill actually spent some time with Hall of Fame quarterback Brett Favre. See what they talked about when Bill Zimper joins us in 5 on News Radio WTAM 1100.
When you look at how both teams are playing, and I think, you know, you look at the Cavs, I'm sure they're looking to have a bounce-back game. A game that they need to get, a game that they need to play better basketball and to be more consistent in what they do on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. So I expect that to be a very good basketball game, a game that will allow this Cavaliers team to get back on track.
Complete Cavaliers coverage. Mike Snyder, that, of course, can't be Russell. We caught up with him yesterday. There's more of that at our podcast, Wills and Snyder Podcast, WTAM.com, or on the iHeartRadio app. Toronto's ahead of the Cavs in the East.
Yeah, they're second in the East, and they've been together. You know, we see them every year in the playoffs. It's a tough team. They're going to be a bit shorthanded tonight, and that usually means you put up a red flag for the Cavs, because it seems like when they face teams that don't have all their guys, the Cavs kind of lose their focus. And I don't know what it was. They had no focus at all in Minnesota, Bill. The Cavs are coming off of their worst performance of the year as they get ready for tonight's game. Newcomer Isaiah Thomas isn't buying that idea that the Cavs can just wait to the playoffs to turn things on and go to the finals.
We can't have loss. I know everybody says, well, this happens to this team, and they've been in 3 straight finals, but that's not acceptable. And I'm going to do my part to show these guys it's not acceptable, and we go from there.
Thomas's wallet was a bit lighter yesterday. He was fined $20,000 for that clothesline hit on Andrew Wiggins on Monday. As I mentioned, the Raptors will be a bit shorthanded tonight. Serge Ibaka is serving a 1-game suspension. He got into a little fisticuff action with Miami's James Johnson in the Raptors last game. And also point guard Kyle Lowry is likely out with a sore back. Cavs-Raptors tonight at 8. We'll have it for you right here. Then they'll play at Indiana tomorrow before they come home to meet the Warriors on Monday. Warriors last night got thumped by the Clippers 125-106. Kevin Durant scored 40, became the second youngest player to reach 20,000 points behind only LeBron. Now the Warriors were without their backcourt combo of Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. Thompson just got the night off, but Curry rolled his ankle that's been bothering him. He did it in a shoot-around, so there's a little question mark there around Steph Curry, maybe even for Monday night. College ball last night, Cleveland State lost a heartbreaker to Detroit Mercy 84-83. Vikes took the lead with just under 4 seconds to play on a 3, only to allow Detroit Mercy to score a driving layup to win the game as the buzzer sounded. Well, it didn't come on the field, but the Browns had a winning day yesterday. New GM John Dorsey announced the hirings of Elliott Wolf as assistant GM and Alonzo Highsmith as vice president of player personnel. Both had spent many years with the Packers, a very good organization. In fact, Wolf turned down an offer from the Raiders to join the Browns. Meanwhile, Hugh Jackson's coaching staff will have a new look. Longtime special teams coach Chris Tabor reportedly on his way to the Bears. Browns also talking to Texans quarterbacks coach Sean Ryan about becoming the Browns' offensive coordinator. In baseball, Indians lineup will have a different look this year. First, it was Carlos Santana to say bye, and now Jay Bruce is going back to the Mets. He's agreed to a 3-year, $39 million deal with his former team. The Indians did avoid salary arbitration and get a 1-year deal done with Cody Allen for just over $10.5 million. Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio WTAM 1100.
Mike, let's talk some football. Playoff games, of course, this weekend. Our Bill Zimfer joins us this morning on News Radio WTAM 1100. Bill, good morning. You spent some time with the Hall of Famer Brett Favre on some issues, right?
Yeah, I did. Spoke with him yesterday, as a matter of fact, Bill. And Brett Favre is involved with and featured in a new documentary that is coming out on the Stadium Network about concussions. And it's interesting because Brett Favre, of course, by his own admission, suffered numerous concussions during his career. And he says, boy, for a lot of that time, even in the NFL, there was no such thing as a concussion protocol. So he is now sounding the alarm about concussions. And he says that part of the problem is the playing surfaces, that 1 in 5 concussions is caused by head-to-ground contact. Of course, we saw that last week in the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor, knocked out of the end of the Bills game there when he went down hard on the ground. So he is really pointing out that field conditions need to be addressed.
And Mike Snyder, we're now seeing it's like the blue tent on the sideline now, where the guys go in for the protocol, right?
Yeah, and they're doing what they can, Bill. It's the nature of the game, though, and you've covered it for years. You can only do so much, but that's a great point that those kind of things like Favre mentions about the playing surface, the protocol, watching the guys, that's what you can do in this game. I don't know that what else you can do beyond that, though.
Yeah, you know, Mike, and I asked him, I said, is the game in danger? Is the game in trouble? And he said, you know, it could be if they don't do the right thing here. The real problem is not with the NFL, not with Division I football. You're still going to have concussions, but they have maybe the best facilities around. The real problem is with youth football, where a lot of times the field conditions are terrible, especially the practice fields, and those kids are in more danger than they have been in a long time, or that we know about. We know about the situation now. So it is an increasing problem, a problem that's not going to go away, but Favre says the NFL's got to do a little more to try to address the problem.
Bill, looking on the field this week, what do you see? You see any upsets, or what do you think we're going to be down to in our final four in the NFL?
Yeah, I think I think the Patriots are going to. By the way, Brett Favre thinks the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl again. So and it was interesting that he said, Mike, that he said the Patriots have the best quarterback in the history of the NFL.
He did say that.
Wow.
Wow.
A little bit interesting there. So he thinks the Patriots are going to go all the way, even over the Steelers. I don't think the Steelers have a problem this week, as well as the Pates. I don't think they'll have a problem either. In the NFL, watch out for the Eagles. With Nick Foles at quarterback, I don't know if they're going to get there.
Now, when is this thing, or what channel is this thing on with Favre?
This is on the Stadium Network. Okay. It premieres this evening and at 6:30 Eastern time, but it will be rerun, and it's available on all their digital platforms as well.
Interesting. Our Bill Zimfer. Bill, thanks, well, D.C. And we'll get to this noise, but news. Are they going to keep things going in Washington? Because there is concern about a possible shutdown. What's the latest here?
Well, the latest is they're still moving forward on trying to come up with an immigration deal that the Democrats say they need first before they can vote on any kind of spending plan. And again, the government would shut down a week from Friday if there is no agreement to keep it funded in some way. So again, I think we're going to see a short-term funding bill get passed if we get closer to that. But in the meantime, they're working on immigration. A group of 6 bipartisan senators continuing to work today on trying to come up with an outline of a legislative plan that would deal with several elements of immigration, specifically to include some sort of solution for those so-called dreamers, the undocumented immigrants brought to the country as kids. So the bipartisan senator group is said to have a plan that would offer a pathway to citizenship for the Dreamers, in addition to some other changes to the diversity lottery visa system and changes to the family-based immigration. You know, those are the two things that the president has complained about. However, with cooking in the House, the conservatives there have their own plan. It takes a much harder line on immigration. It would crack down more on sanctuary cities. It would end the visa lottery program and end family-based migration, but it would also offer a three-year work permit to DACA recipients, but no path to citizenship. And as the president made clear yesterday again on Twitter and in his news conference, he won't sign anything if it doesn't include a wall. But what we're finding is it's the definition of what that wall will be, and it seems that there's a growing consensus. It doesn't have to be 2,000 miles of wall. It could be fencing and so forth. So that's where we stand.
A lot of this played out in a meeting that was, of course, televised the other day at the White House. We've been talking about that some. Senator Dianne Feinstein, California there. But then after she left the meeting, she released some testimony that was behind closed doors on this dossier with the Fusion GPS story and all, and there's some fallout with that, right?
That's right, and the president called her sneaky in a tweet that she did release, and he implied that it was not only underhanded but possibly illegal. She released the transcript of Glenn Simpson. He is with Fusion GPS. He's a former reporter from the Wall Street Journal and now part of this group that did work with the dossier's author, Christopher Steele, and it did come up with some interesting insight into the ongoing Russia investigation. One of the headline making elements of that is that when Christopher Steele, concerned about possible Russian interference, went to the FBI told him they'd already had other intelligence that backs up the claims in the dossier. So a lot of concerns and talk about that. A lot of headlines coming out of that. Of course, yesterday we heard the president again emphasizing no collusion and that he doesn't think he'd even have to be interviewed by Robert Mueller, who's now conducting the investigation, said it's unlikely that he would be, but he'll see what happens. So still a lot going on with the whole Russian controversy.
Sharon Reed on the noise in the news out of D.C. this morning on so many angles and stories. Good stuff. Sharon, thanks much.
Take care.
Some beer news of the week. Couple of events coming up, too. This is Bill Wills. Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, joins me. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, before we get to a couple things and some ticket info on the annual Beer and Music Fest, Town Hall has had a great success here, and you're telling me this week you found out they're expanding?
Yeah, this is interesting because Town Hall has been very successful in the few years they've been open in Ohio City. They're really one of the anchors over on West 25th, and they're going to be adding a location in Columbus Short North neighborhood. So I'm not real familiar with the neighborhood, but apparently there's a lot of local bars, restaurants, coffee shops. Sounds a little bit like Ohio City.
Right.
And ironically, it's also going to be near the Columbus location of Melt Bar and Grill. Hmm. So obviously a local chain here that also features craft beer. And so Town Hall has a lot going on, and they're always obviously really big on their crafts and their non-GMO organic food options. So that news just came out this week. So it'll be interesting to see a little expansion from Town Hall to Columbus.
Always love a positive story about any business tied to Northeast Ohio, and it's good for Town Hall. Way to go. All right, a couple events coming up. You can get out and enjoy. Get out here in the wintertime and enjoy a couple things. One benefits a nice charity, of course, the work at Our Lady of the Wayside. Before we get to that, let me ask you about info on local brews, local grooves, House of Blues, annual Beer and Music Fest. Tickets go on sale Friday at 10 a.m., and what a lineup they have for me to enjoy, right?
Yeah, if you're a real music lover who loves craft beer, this is really the event for you. And I love this time of year because this is almost like in the past I've kind of likened this time for beer drinkers to NASCAR, because as NASCAR gets ready to kick off their season with the Super Bowl, the beer season is kicking off with a lot of great events. And this is one of them. And the reason why I think it's neat is because a beer fest should really take on its own identity. This one really focuses on music as well as the craft beer. So it really rolls off your tongue. Local brews, local grooves at House of Blues. You've got 17, I think at last count, 17 breweries, mostly local. and about a dozen bands, musicians, DJs, all performing. And it's, you know, it sounds like a lot of fun. I also like the fact that they've got multiple ticket options. So there's a VIP entry ticket. There's also, which allows you earlier access, mm-hmm. a couple general admission packages. And it just sounds like a lot of fun. So as you said, Bill, the tickets go on sale 10 a.m. Friday, January 12th. The fest itself will be Saturday, February 24th, and that's over at House of Blues over in the East 4th Street area.
Good event. Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com with me. Okay, one more event. Want to get a plug in here for the benefits, a great partner of ours, Our Lady of the Wayside, 24th annual event for some wonderful food to get out, mingle a bit. It's Cleveland's finest hors d'oeuvres and a contest as well, right?
Yeah, I love this event. I've been to it the past couple of years. Our Lady of the Wayside has two very good events that are fundraisers throughout the year right in Cleveland, and they've been held in Progressive Field. They have Grapes and Ale, which mm-hmm. really focuses on the wine and some craft beer along with some taste. This one's the other way around. The focus is more on the food. So Cleveland's Finest Hors d'oeuvre Contest will be Thursday, February 22nd. It's in the Terrace Club. If you've never been there, it's a great venue. The stair-step design gives you a great view of the field. I love it when even there's a little snow on the field. And the fun thing about this, as you said, it's also a contest. So you're going to taste some very, very well-crafted, well-made hot appetizers and hors d'oeuvres from a variety of really good local restaurants. And the fun part is you can vote on what your favorite is. Now, the last couple of years, Corleone's has done really well. They're the defending champs. They always come up with something really, really creative, and they're going to be back this year.
5 good minutes.
And it's a great part of life in Northeast Ohio, and the management of that does seem to cost some money. Tax dollars at work, and a guy that keeps a spotlight on our tax dollars is Mark Namek, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, joins me this morning. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning. I think you just nailed the point. We do have a great park system.
You posted, and if you follow Mark Namek on Twitter, good follow, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, taxpayers should use or at very least take note of the region's great park system. And we have our director, the CEO of the Metro Parks, Brian Zimmerman, who runs it. Now, this guy's hired in 2010 at a salary of, what, $145,000. He's now up to $237,000. We pay him more than the person that runs the U.S. National Park Service. We're not saying anything illegal is going on, but my goodness, that's a heck of a raise over a few years.
That's 63% raise. And we got to remember that back in 2013, taxpayers themselves made a lot of this possible, the expansion, the ability to really improve the services, because we voted for a 50% levy increase. I mean, and we now generate $70 million a year for the park system. It used to be 53-ish. So that's a lot of money to give to the system. Brian Zimmerman's a good steward of that, but I have been arguing that the board is basically trying to suggest that the improvements really all lay at his feet, and so let's keep rewarding him when, in fact, you know, we have injected the system with that additional taxpayer money.
The board, through a spokesman, basically sent back that, hey, under his leadership, the Metro Parks has received many awards from Crane's Cleveland Business and Entrepreneur of the Year and others, which is all great PR, don't get me wrong. And, but here's a couple questions I had as you went through this story. He goes from 145 to 237. I think there is competition, public-private sector. You got to find good people to run both. And look, in the public sector, a lot of these jobs just don't pay like they would in the private. Except, I guess, if you're running the Metro Parks, when it comes to budget. But Mark, here's a couple problems, at least I had. 5 weeks vacation, he doesn't use it, we pay him. And the Metro Parks employees, others can't do some of these things, same things. That just seems odd.
Yeah, well, other employees do get to carry over some days to a certain amount. But now you're allowing someone to get up to 4% of their salary by not using vacation days. That's like it's adding more. And let's put it in perspective. His supporters will argue, well, he, you know, has a $98 million budget, lots of employees. Look at this. Well, let's look at the county executive, the mayor. They have budgets 5 or 10 times larger, thousands of employees. They don't make anywhere near this money. I mean, you know, county executive and the mayor, they make under $200,000. So by their logic, should all of these people be paid more to be commensurate with a CEO of a company? No, that's why it's public service. And the benefits that come along with these jobs are very good, that are hard to match in the private sector. I'm saying it needs more balance. Let's not get caught up into thinking that the CEO is responsible for every bit of success in the parks. They were excellent before when they were run by people who made far less. He has expanded, done better, increased the success, certainly deserves raises, but 63% since 2010 is excessive, in my opinion.
These are approved by a three-member board of commissioners?
Yes. And they're appointed by the probate court judge, Russo.
So that's who he reports to.
That's the system, yeah.
That's the system is, shall we say.
Yeah, and the three-member judge or three-member commissioners, you know, they evaluate. They are the bosses, and they are the ones who have to approve many, many expenditures that come through. But, you know, they're not super open about their process. They do evaluate behind closed doors. And they stand by it, and that's their right. I'm asking that the taxpayers just pay more attention.
Good question. That's why we got a spotlight, and you're on with me, Mark Namek, Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com. Good follow on Twitter. We linked up, and if you follow me at Bill Wells, WTAM, to what Mark wrote. Hey, let me get you out of here on a kind of a same but a different issue. Public records, city, hall, plain dealer, a lot of people going back and forth. They're not being as open and as quickly as open at times, are they?
This has been a 12-year battle. the city, and so that it goes all the way back to Mayor Frank Jackson's first term. Look, the issue there is they just don't prioritize it. They don't see it as part of their public duty.
Right.
And it is.
It's not our business what they're doing. Mark, come on. Right?
And so they are making an effort
to
try to make the process work a little faster by having an easy portal online that you can just log into and ask your request. Problem is things just, they fade. They take weeks to get basic things. We recently asked for a list of phone numbers.
Yeah, just a list of numbers.
It was 24 days. We still hadn't had it until I mocked it in a column, and we got it that very same day. So they've just still got to up their game. And it's important because there are many things that would benefit the city themselves by getting us accurate information, perspective. They also are real reluctant to let directors of departments, people with facts, actually speak
right
candidly about facts. And so they lose because they're not giving the right context, and we can't read minds. And I'm hoping that under the new term, got a new chief of staff over there working for the mayor, former finance director,
right.
Aaron Dumas,
right.
Who seems to really be moving things forward. We'll wait and see, but public records are part of their public duty.
Keep a sharp eye and keep us posted. You do a great job. Mark Namek, Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com. Thanks, pal.
Thank you.
And I'm reminded of this. My daughter Serena was home for Christmas, so we did daddy-daughter day, go downtown for lunch. And it is fun pointing out things about, we start downtown, you know, some 15,000 there,
start,
and we've
got
another crane up here and there, and that, and you kind of move out. So it looks good. The numbers look good. You would know how we're trending. So how's business?
It does look good. We're seeing, and we'll talk about this a little bit, the interest in so many more companies to consider expansions in our region, investments in our region. You know, the only difficulty we're seeing in the companies is finding the right talent. And that's something that's right at the top of not only their radar screens, but ours, and that's something that's going to really need to be addressed in the next decade.
I want to ask you more about workforce and that sort of thing. Development, too. At the end of the year, this historic tax credit was debated, kicked around a lot. You were heading to Washington.
Again, that was one we really needed in this city. The New Markets Tax Credit, the historic tax credit are tools that have been a fundamental part of everything you just talked about in terms of the way downtown's changing, some of our neighborhoods are changing, and they were at risk. Our delegation came through, but in particular, Senator Portman, really, because of the position he had in the final negotiations around tax reform, really led this for us, and we were able to preserve those two tools in the tax reform bill. And at the end of the day, while they're tax credits, they actually are dynamic and create more output and more tax dollars as a result.
I had Ed Asher on developer standard mm-hmm. building downtown mm-hmm. that they've opened up last week right. to apartments, and he was on with me last week. We did a whole series talking about
downtown development. You did a great series on each project yeah. that was going forward.
And I asked tax credits, and that's one of those incentives that has really been yeah. used. Not just in Cleveland.
Especially,
I mean,
you know, we have a great stock of old buildings that can be renovated.
Yeah.
But it's more expensive, which is why those historic tax credits are so fundamental to getting those buildings changed around.
Greater Cleveland Partnership in studio, talking about our town, our region. Let me get to Washington here for just a minute, because look, this big tax bill went through. I see headlines with some big companies that are handing out bonuses. We can debate trickle down, don't get me wrong. But at least in the business community, you got to know what's going to happen
yes.
to set policy. You need to know policy to set what you want to do, right?
That's absolutely okay. right. And there is a lot of still analysis going on as to what actually took place. Did a little different for each kind of industry. One of the big things that still hasn't been resolved, which actually we're involved with next month, is what's going to happen to NAFTA, which also will have an impact, especially on companies both in manufacturing and agriculture. And those are both big in the state of Ohio. So those are important
Good
components
point.
To wrap in to the overall impact of how a company deals with, in the best way they can, tax reform. And we hope that means more investment.
I get it. A company, the argument was you got to cut the corporate tax, so a company, I'll use Eaton as an example. Eaton brings that money back. Well, guess what? If I'm Eaton, I'll bring it back, but I want to. There's got to be demand.
Absolutely.
I got to have a reason, right?
And they have to have opportunities to invest.
Right.
And that's what we need to okay. make more of. The one of the biggest challenges we have in this area, Opportunity Corridor, is part of that, addressing part of that, is we need more sites ready for development so that when a company is ready to invest those proceeds, they can do it here, not to go a couple hundred miles away to a clean, green field.
Joe Roman, Greater Cleveland Partnership with me. Let me take you through a couple things. State capital bill projects, what's going on?
Yeah, we sometimes used to call that the silly season,
mm-hmm.
And that's not to be critical. Every 2 years, the state does a capital budget, which means they put money out there that will be available to help universities, to help infrastructure, but they also put a little bit aside, which is called the community pot. That means every major metropolitan area of the state competes for, both internally and then obviously with each other, how much of those dollars can come to their locality and
okay.
invest in key projects. So
okay.
we play a role in helping to work with our local legislators to look at projects that are looking for money, try to make sure if that money can really be used in a certain time period. We don't want to get an award that's never used. And we work together to try to figure out what are the top 10, 12, 14 projects in our area, and by that I mean the county. These are awarded on a county-by-county basis. So we've got projects. One of the big ones for us is Irishtown Bend, because, as you know,
mm-hmm.
if Irishtown Bend were, unfortunately, ever to fall into the river,
mm-hmm.
we don't have an active port or, therefore, an active steel industry in this town. So it's a big, big investment. But there are some other neighborhood projects. Two big anchor projects like Playhouse Square and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, key to our hospitality business along with the art museum, are also asking for some dollars. So we try to blend what are the big anchors that are key and what are some new emerging projects that probably could only happen if that state capital were made available.
In a way, it's infrastructure I'm not driving on, but I'm driving to.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are some
stuff.
Near
okay.
West Side projects around the Metro Health transformation that could be really key. Those
That's
kinds
exciting
of
too,
things.
Metro.
That's very
yeah,
exciting.
Very
exciting.
Okay. A couple of things while I got you. Jobs Ohio, Team Neo, you guys are all working together. We talk about getting more business in Northeast Ohio. You got to retain what we have as well, because there's always competition.
You know,
right?
it's very clear. Even though the company that moves in is the sexy new entrant to an economy, about 80% of job creation in our region is created by people who are already here. And what we've realized in the last year or so is that Cleveland is the biggest region in the state. And we were trying to service it without the right capacity. So working with Team Neo, our partner, and Jobs Ohio, we've all been able to, especially Jobs Ohio and my organization, GCP, will be doubling down, investing more money in people that will actually be able to get out to companies and help them expand. That's key for our area because, again, it's probably 80% of job creation The Amazons coming are great, and we did great. But the progressives expanding are even more likely because they're already here and they're already committed to your region.
And quality people to work.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a challenge too, right?
Got to find that talent. And, you know, a lot of companies are doing it. We're spending a lot of time in that area. For instance, we'll be having our, and we'll talk about this maybe next time I visit with you.
Yeah.
We're having a big internship summit in February. And interns, we're trying to get more and more companies in the region to see the value of internships. Not only does it help them find talent, but it really develops the talent. And more than that, you've probably had this experience in your life. I have. So many people that intern with a company end up working there.
Absolutely.
Because they get to know each other.
Absolutely.
And they get to know the skill set. And it's just a great way to move forward
on
that talent
issue. And if you're
sitting
at a company trying to figure out how you're going to reach Generation X or younger millennials, look around the room.
Absolutely.
Where are they?
And a lot of
Bring them in for an intern.
Exactly. And a lot of middle market companies, you know, they may not have a full-time HR director. They may not have an inside legal counsel. And sometimes adding an intern can be a little bit scary just because you don't know what the legalities are.
Right, right.
We try to answer all those questions
for
them.
Good stuff. All right. Thanks for the partnership. The time is always
appreciated. You bet. Good to see you.
Joe Roman, Greater Cleveland Partnership, talking about our town and region.